Today is January 17th, 1973. The following interview is with John Carlson, C-A-R-L-S-O-N. The interview will take place in room 487 of the Office of Presidential Papers and Archives. The interviewer is Terry Good. All right, we'll start with the most basic of the questions, John. You joined the White House staff when?
March 1972.
Your last day on the staff?
15th of December, 72.
Your title while on the staff?
Staff assistant.
All right. And for the period of time that you were here, you were assigned to Charles Colson's staff. Did you have a secretary?
Yes, Connie Thumma. T-H-U-M-M-A.
All right. Where can we reach you in 5 years and 10 years, and we might want to get back to you for another interview?
If I knew that, I would be pleased myself.
All right, here are some of the responses we've gotten to that. The Alumni Association of your college or university, do you continue to kick in $5 or $10 a year on
that? The latter, but the former.
What's the name of the university?
Washington State.
All right. Are you a member of any professional organization that you'll maintain?
No.
Is there the possibility that we might be able to reach you through Chuck Colson, or?
It's possible. Or parents.
Your parents. If you could give us their name and address.
Their name is John O. Carlson. Father's name, 5626 South Birmingham, Tacoma, Washington.
All right. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Sister in Seattle.
In Seattle. Do you have her name?
Her name is Mrs. David Lord.
L-O-R?
Norma. Pardon me?
L-O-R-D?
Yes.
I have a fair idea of what your response to this question is going to be, and it won't surprise me because everybody on this White House staff has said the same thing. Are there any magazine or newspaper articles that come to mind that treat your activities, responsibilities in a way that is accurate and complete? Now, most people around here have said they've operated anonymously and there aren't any articles that really do justice to what they did. But every now and then somebody will say, well, there was an article in my local paper that mentioned something about me, but it was very brief and superficial. So outside of that, no. I don't know what's your response.
That's basically correct, though the Wall Street Journal did have an article or two on Chuck Colson, which was fairly factual.
Is that right?
Made him look out to be a real bad man, and it wasn't quite that factual, but it did have some basic principles that were correct. But nothing concerning me personally.
All right. Some of the assignments or responsibilities that were mentioned in that article, were you involved in any of those?
No.
Okay. Again, a question that we ask everybody, and we'll let's get the same answer to. Records of your activities, will we find adequate documentation of your activities and responsibilities in Chuck Colson's files, White House Central files, or anybody's files?
Very little documentation.
All right. Again, that's one of the reasons for this type of interview, to try and document your role and responsibilities. That hits the basic questions. Now we move into the one that becomes more substantive, and that is the organization and the activities of the Charles Colson Shop. Very generally, is there any way that you could divide the Chuck Colson operation up? In terms of broad areas of responsibility. Now, I understand that he was involved in coordination of public information operations throughout the executive branch. This was something that Herb Klein had initially, and I understand it shifted over to Colson. So that's one broad area that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Are there others?
Well, Chuck Colson was also the liaison with public interest groups,
right,
such as business, labor, ethnic, aging, elderly people, just about every special interest group you can think of, we had a liaison with that group. Sometimes the same person might have had two or three groups. So.
All right. Henry Cashin mentioned something about this, and I gathered that for the most part, that operation was handled by Chuck Colson and Henry Cashin. Were there others involved in that area that Any names that come to mind?
Am I to talk about this and this?
Just very...
Anything to do with me now?
No, I know it isn't, but it at least gives me some better feel for Colson's shop, and perhaps then I can better place you in relation to the other people there. Just names at this point is on the list.
Well, Mike Balzano was a liaison with Ethnics. Bud Evans was liaison with the elderly. Henry Cashin was with Labor. And Bill Radigan was a liaison with the veterans.
Now, Cashin mentioned that one.
I've been away from it for a few weeks now, but basically that's the way things were organized. Henry Cohen, what's his name? Howard Cohen was a liaison with the Jewish community, and so forth.
Did Chuck Colson himself have any specific special interest groups that he more or less oversaw?
Well, he handled the major things as far as dealing with labor or business and so forth. The day-to-day thing would be his number one guy in that area. For example, I was a liaison with the PIOs in the administration. But if there was a big crucial problem or something, he would probably handle it himself.
But I understand.
I was the number one guy or number two guy or whatever you say, every day dealing with the guys.
So where these other people that you named were liaison with special interest groups outside the government, you were the person that was a liaison within the executive branch.
Exactly.
All right. And your contacts were with the public information officers or offices in all of the departments and agencies?
The nine domestic departments, excluding state and defense.
You worked with, under, or over Des Barker?
I worked under Des Barker. With him, but under him. I got, if it dealt strictly with the PIOs, I would work with Des Barker. Now, Chuck Colson quite often would give me other projects completely unrelated to working with the PIOs. And but the normal job, 80% of the time, was with the PIO.
What was your, how did Des Barker fit into this? Did you go to him, did you receive your instructions from him or from Colson, or did the two of you more or less work together on these various projects, or was he over you in addition to other assignments? I'm phrasing that poorly.
That makes sense. Des Barker and I would both go to a staff meeting with Colson. And to make it simple, I would do the nitty-gritties, the day-to-day stuff. Des Barker would handle the major things. For example, if it was a big, very important call to Secretary Butts in Atlanta, he would call him. If it was a basic call to Butts the next day in his office or to his undersecretary, I would probably handle that. But there are nine domestic departments with so much happening. Things were always going, and we didn't divide the departments in half, but there are certain things that I would look for, and certain things Des would look for. But I was under Des. Des is a special assistant president, commissioned officer, which is a one step up, but that's a giant step up.
So you two were responsible for the nine domestic departments. Was there anybody on Colson's staff that was responsible for state, defense, or any
somewhat, but not really. John Scally was the counterpart for state and defense, though he didn't really do much of the same type thing. But initially, I think he was the counterpart. And he was very close to Kissinger operation, for example. But they had different problems than we had, different type.
Was Scally under Colson, or was he more or less kind of somewhere between Colson and Kissinger?
Well, that's probably more like it, the latter. He came to a few staff meetings with Chuck Colson, but I don't think John Scally, you could say, would report to Chuck Colson. But he was worked closely with him at times, I'm sure. And maybe this evolved after I got there. Maybe 2 years ago he worked directly for Colson, perhaps. I don't know.
In terms of the you mentioned this, a Chuck Colson staff meeting, did these occur with any regularity or frequency or on a when necessary basis?
Every Monday at 9:15.
9:15.
And then as the campaign got hot in the last couple months, it became less regular. But probably once every 2 weeks on call.
Were these for the purpose of getting reports from all of his people, or perhaps also for Colson to give instructions and guidance to the staff or?
Both. Main thing though you'd bring up in those meetings was to tell Chuck Colson something that would relate to other staff members. And, because you would very seldom see the other staff members. And sometimes a veteran's problem might also touch the elderly problem or something like that, or an ethnic problem, a Jewish problem, and a youth group problem might all fit in somehow. So at that time, Colson would sign one guy to follow through on, for example.
Would there be documentation of some of these activities?
I sure doubt it.
Okay, so most of it would have been handled by phone, face-to-face, what have you. This is one of the crucial problems I see with the Colson operation. I think it's extremely significant. I'm not historically minded enough to know if previous administrations have had people on their staff that were assigned that specific responsibility. I'm sure it was handled within the White House in every case, but I don't know if it was so formalized as it is with Colson.
Well, Chuck Colson's role, I think, is extremely important. And what he did prior to the campaign and dealing with the business community and the labor leaders and so forth. The campaign, of course, is even more sensitive and more important. But if Chuck Colson doesn't tell you about it, then nobody should tell you about
it. Yeah, no, we wouldn't expect anybody under him to say if he didn't. Mm-hmm. And I think he did make some references that are sufficient for our purposes now. But
for example, who's ever going to be the next campaign manager of a Republican candidate for president in 1976, for example, should know all that stuff.
I'm sure they'll find Colson,
sure they
wherever
will.
He might be, they're going to run him down. But the whole growth of the Chuck Colson office, I think historically is very significant, because when he first came, he only had one or two people.
That's right.
Henry Cashin and George Bell, I think. And I can remember talking with people on the Klein shop back in 70, 71, and they were talking about their responsibilities under Klein for coordination of communications activities, executive branch. And then slowly but surely, I started picking up indications that this was beginning to move in the Colson direction. Mm-hmm. And that, in addition to some of these other things that Colson picked up, he's become a very important person. And I also further found it very enlightening to see how the frequency of direct presidential contact between Colson and the president suddenly just went like this. It really took off. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very interesting and significant barometer.
Well, Ron Ziegler, as I understand it, was the spokesman for the president, whereas Herb Klein was a spokesman for the administration. And he had a great rapport with the newspaper editors and so forth all around the country. And he was off probably over half the time. So I can see how this could kind of evolve to a guy who was right down the hall there all the time and could work on this day-to-day, where Herb was the, you know, the good image, the good personality, and he could go out and talk to these guys continually. And so this is probably a long period of evolution.
It's probably so. I think you said earlier that you had something, maybe you could kind of trace your involvement in this. I'm not sure, but I think you were referring to that piece of paper you've got there. Maybe this is the time to do it, because I want to ask you, how did you get involved in this? Maybe that doesn't...
Well, the whole function, for example, in the fall of 1971, they did a communication study to determine how to upgrade the communications effort of each of the departments. Okay?
Yeah.
And following that study, it was found, and there's a big voluminous report someplace, that a great deal of work and upgrading had to be done in each of the departments, and all of them had common problems, etc. So communication standards and communication activities were established, and I came in and helped establish those and then followed through to make sure that the standards were met.
Is your specialty and your background in this area of communications? I had gotten the impression it was political science.
Well, I would hope that I'm a manager and a motivator and administrator and a doer.
Okay.
And so, being an organized type guy, I would hope that I could deal with 9 different departments every day and keep each one straight. When I had to call this one, tell them this, and that one, call them that, and keep 15 balls bouncing in the air at the same time, we could do that. But I've been involved in politics and so forth. So.
So it's a combination. You've got political experience as well as this managerial experience in the background.
My last job, I was assistant to chairman of the board of a financial conglomerate. We had 14 subsidiaries. And I like to say that I was kind of the halderman of the company. And who would see the who would see the chairman and what projects. And I was a liaison with the different presidents of the subs, because the chairman of the board and president was gone, going all over the place. And we were building hotels in the Virgin Islands and hotels in Miami and all kinds of things all over the country. So a lot of things were happening. And somehow when somebody saw my resume of dealing with 9 departments, they said, well, that might match up somehow. So.
How do I want to ask this? We almost invariably ask, how did you come to join the White House staff? Again, poorly phrased, but was it through just a resume that you submitted, or was it through your contact with somebody on the White House staff? Sometimes this is very revealing. You know, Henry Cashin had evidently known Charles Colson at some point through maybe Brown University or what have you. Often it's a friendship that has been present for a number of years now. Was that your situation at all?
Well, in 1968, I ran a U.S. Senate campaign out in the state of Washington. And at that time, I was written up at 27 years of age as the youngest U.S. Senate campaign manager in the United States. And to go back one step further, I would think I was 23 years of age, and I was a company commander of an infantry outfit. Okay? And so in 1968, while I was involved in the U.S. Senate race, a group of guys came to Seattle for the advance team for Richard Nixon, who was running for the presidency. And I met some guys, and Ed Morgan, for example, was the advance leader, advance man. And then a few days later, after I helped them organize press and hotels and crowds and signs and all that kind of stuff, Dwight Chapin came into town, Ron Ziegler, and so forth. And then I guess they put my application or resume or something on the camp, put me in a talent bank, and talked to me just briefly, different people, about working in the camp, working in the White House or in the administration, like 6 months later. And by then, by that time, I was going back to Michigan to make my millions of dollars, because I made some contacts back there. But somehow, in 1972, and I guess I had a few calls in the last couple of years, but I got another call. And so I thought, if I ever was going to join government, this would be the year to do it, with the campaign and the interest and activity. So I met Chuck Colson. The reason I mentioned about my company commander and my U.S. Senate campaign, he had a write-up in the Wall Street Journal as being the youngest company commander at the age of 24, and the youngest U.S. Senate campaign manager at the age of 27 or 28. And so I joked about that they were in error, because I was the same, but a younger age. And I said, so, anyway, that's when I first met Chuck Colson, and really liked him and realized he was a guy of action and so forth. I swore I'd never get involved in the government bureaucracy, but that's when I came.
Well, the White House isn't quite as bureaucratic.
It sure is not.
Executive agency.
It is not. We could call a department, ask them for a report or something, be here by messenger in 10 minutes.
That's right.
And that's very nice to get a response like that.
Mm-hmm. Would you be one of the people that would be able to shed some light on the 1972 campaign itself? There are a lot of people in the White House staff that will ask questions, you know, to what degree were you involved in the 72 campaign? Were you at a policy level in it, or were you at an operational level of it, or were you not involved at all in the political thing? Would we be misrepresenting you if we thought of you as somebody that contributed to the political campaign? Now, given Chuck Colson's role, it's public knowledge that he had something to do with the political campaign. Were you one of the people on the staff that contributed to whatever he did in politics? Would we be misrepresenting you if we thought of you as someone who contributed to the campaign in whatever fashion, without going into specifics?
Okay, one of the roles during the campaign was my function to ensure that the cabinet officers always had up-to-date information, that they had the current fact sheets, and so forth. For example, when the president, let's say, mined Haiphong Harbor, we wanted to make sure that all the cabinet officers spoke with the facts, spoke with the same tongue. So we get out little handouts that showed the facts of just exactly what he did, when he did it, why he did it. And it's quite embarrassing for a cabinet officer not to know how many mines were dropped when the reporter knows, because it was in the paper that day or something. So we try to keep them informed at all times. Even if they're out on the West Coast for a week, we keep them informed of the latest happenings back here, so they wouldn't get caught on the blind side with some activity happening here and some reporter picking that up.
This, again, was the same thing that you've been doing all along, so it really wasn't any great change.
Except it probably became more significant or more important because of the added publicity on the Kavanaugh.
Right, right. During the campaign, you'd expect a heightened interest on the part of everybody.
Exactly.
Okay, so that role just continued. Were there any other assignments that you got, John, that were ongoing beyond this one that you think might be historically significant and we ought to be prepared to discuss with you in the future?
Nothing ongoing. I would set up like the revenue sharing meeting with all the governors and county officials when from around the country, but that's not ongoing. Little projects like this, it would take a great deal of time, really, to who should be invited, where will the reception be held, what should be served, you know, which way does the president enter, all of the little logistics, which are very interesting, but nothing ongoing, just project type things that would occur from time to time.
And this would be the type of thing that anybody on Colson's staff might be assigned at any point.
Exactly.
A different type of project,
right,
whenever it happened to break. And,
but my function, for example, was dealing with the domestic departments. In this role, I dealt with the domestic council. And in between the two then, revenue sharing was a very big deal. And it finally passed the Congress. And so then we're going to have a big historic signing ceremony. Well, I worked with Treasury on getting the proper materials prepared, with the domestic council on their background information and so forth. So it was probably a natural for me to do things like that because it involved the domestic departments and the domestic council.
Did you, for the most part, stay here within the complex, or did you do any traveling to speak of?
My traveling would be from here to Commerce, or here to HUD, or here to transportation. But that's all. I went to Michigan, for example, and spoke to 1,200 Boys State Convention kids and stuff like that, but no real traveling at all.
Your contacts with the domestic council, were there any people there that you met with frequently, or were there some, maybe it'd be better to phrase it negatively, were there some of the domestic council that you didn't meet with at all?
Well, I think
the top six?
Okay, I was going to say there are 80 people.
Yeah, the Ed Morgans, okay. The Bud Krogs.
Yeah, I've worked with Bud Krog, Ed Harper, Jim Kavanaugh, Dana Mead. I hate to leave anybody out, but just numerous people, depending on the situation, whether it's an education problem, transportation problem, or a revenue sharing problem, or whatever.
Did you attend any of the 7:30 meetings that...
Des Barker attended those.
Okay. I think, based upon what I've got to go on, that hits the highlights. Now, if there's anything that we've left out that I haven't thought about, based on what you said, we don't expect to find much about you specifically in any of the official files.
Hopefully not.
Well, that simply means that we'll probably be knocking on your door a lot more frequently and persistently than we would have if everything was in file. Were there any reports that were done that you actually did, but let's say Des Barker or Chuck Colson signed?
Sure, yeah.
In any specific areas?
We did a communication study in the fall of 1971.
That's what you mentioned earlier?
Yes, and that was the basis for Des Barker and my job, you might say.
Right.
It said that we have to upgrade the PIO functions of the various departments so they can better communicate what they're doing to the world, the public. And then, like in March of 72, they had a progress report. Big thick report, and then I believe in August there was like a final report on a final evaluation of the communications effort, and we worked on this.
And when you say we, was it you and Des Barker, or were
yes.
there more people?
Well, people like Al Snyder would be involved in that somewhat, Stan Scott, because we're trying to upgrade the minority interest, and so they have a minority press releases and so forth. And I think Des Barker signed the report properly and went to Chuck Colson. I think Chuck Colson probably redrafted it and signed it and sent it to Bob Haldeman.
But we can assume that you had considerable influence over the substance, the thrust, and
I'd
the evaluations
influence.
Of the article?
I'd say
the reports.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say considerable.
Did you have much contact with Capitol Hill, congressmen, senators, or their staff?
Not really. The only contact I had was during the the Wilkes-Barre Harrisburg flood. And at that time, I'm not even sure how I got involved, but we dealt with the Hill for quite a while, quite a bit. But no continuing relationship at all, just with the 9 domestic departments.
Are there names of any public information officers within those departments that you might want to name? That, let's say at some point we wanted to try and contact any of those people, rather than just going to the departments and saying who was on your staff during the Nixon administration.
I can tell you the PIO for each department.
If you could, that might help.
Okay, you tell me the department. Okay. Commerce.
All right.
It's Bud Litton.
All right.
Transportation is Dave Crowther. Labor is Johnson. Can't think. John Leslie was the number 2 guy.
I hired a new guy there at the end.
If you can give us just one name, you know, we've got somebody trying
Johnson,
to trace.
That's right. Okay, interior is Bob Kelly. Treasury, Jim Donnelly. You tell me the departments. I keep HUD was Jim Judge. HEW was Bob Beatty.
Justice?
Justice was Jack Hushin.
So I leave out.
Yeah. I'm sure we left one out because.
Transportation, HUD, HEW, Justice, Commerce, Treasury,
Labor. Got that. Frank Johnson was Labor. Frank Johnson.
All right.
Recent, fairly recent hire. I think that's it. Now, also, those people have 2 or 3 people, which I know, but agriculture is Claude Gifford.
Okay. This responsibility that you had, this assignment that you had, coordination of public information for the executive branch, do you think that historically that would be an area that political scientists or media and communication people would want to pursue and study? I'm thinking now, should we spend the time as the years go on to attempt to dig up information on this and to make contact with these people that you just named, as well as yourself and Des Barker and Chuck Colson and perhaps the people on the Klein staff that handled it originally? Would it be worth our time to try and talk about this in the historical context or perhaps in the business administration or the government context, perhaps?
Well, the press keeps talking about, you know, there's just a complete thirst for news of what's going on here in the administration. And there's so much going on in the Department of Labor or HUD, you know, all the programs, all the different things that go on that the public really doesn't know about. And there's a wealth of information there. And our job, our mission was to get them to improve their communication so people would know what they were doing. I mean, here we're paying, you know, public is paying taxes. They got all these big bureaucrats back here, but really no one knows what they do. And we helped them establish radio spotmaster service. Any idea what that is?
Not right offhand, other than it must be something the radios broadcast.
Well, what would happen is a small radio, the larger networks obviously have newspaper people right here in town, right? They're network officials right here in town. And if there is a public ceremony over the transportation with Volpe cutting a ribbon or opening a new turbojet car or something, they have the cameras and the people right there to cover it. But the smaller stations in Iowa and Ohio and so forth can't afford that. Well, each of the departments established, and some of these have been going on for many, many years, established a telephone number whereby the radio stations could call in and get a 30-second to 45-second spot radio announcement. With Secretary Volpe saying how appreciative he is of this General Motors effort. They, you know, spent $1 million on this car and donated to the government. And testing airbags maybe or something like that. Well, what the radio station out in Ohio will say, now a reporter in Washington will bring you the Volpe announcement today. And then they'll switch there and then so forth. And that's how the smaller stations all around the country utilize the Spotmaster service. We had seminars teaching them how to upgrade these tapes and how to make them more concise. And so
were you involved in any of those seminars to speak
of? I set them up. I ran them, did everything with them.
Would the files reflect this at all?
I doubt it.
Well, these were then held over at Commerce.
Right, and I was there showing also the White House interest in the different departments, improving and upgrading their communications effort.
Some historian might be quite fascinated by the substance, the thrust of these seminars. Would there be any record of all, at all, let's say, would Commerce have anything over there that reflect, maybe there, is there an agenda on the seminars?
For a historian, a guy named Charles Warren, who was with Mutual Broadcasting 25 years and here in Washington, the bureau chief for 21 years, he's the fellow who actually put on the seminar. And he knew what the radio stations wanted. They didn't want a 20-minute speech. They just wanted the highlights of that speech. And so he taught these radio people how to get the highlights. For example, if James Hodson was going to go give a long speech tomorrow, perhaps today he would just give a 2-3 sentence synopsis of what he was going to say tomorrow. They'd get that on tape, and then tomorrow they'd play the highlights of that. Say, a few minutes ago, Secretary Hodson just said, and they'd play that. And so it was a real good way that different stations around the country could keep up to date on what's going on here in Washington without having to pay an exorbitant cost for reporters and so forth.
This was primarily directed toward the radio people, at least what you just mentioned. Were there similar seminars or efforts directed towards television?
We had hoped to get to television, but television is so expensive and so costly and so involved that we never got that far.
How about the print media?
We spent days and months with the print. I mean, that's the first one.
All right.
News releases and how to write news releases.
You probably didn't have much contact with the media people outside of the executive agencies, did you? That would have been through Klein Shop.
You mean the government agencies?
No. Let's say ABC, NBC.
Not at all.
The various newspapers and what have you. Okay.
Herb Kleinreich did handle all the press briefings and things like that. But we did deal with the agencies. I should mention that, I guess. Besides the 9 domestic departments, we dealt with the PIOs of the various agencies like Action, OEO, VA, so forth, SBA. But without downgrading them, they're really small potatoes compared to a big Department of Labor or Commerce. But we dealt with them quite regularly, though not on a day-to-day basis. Maybe once a week, I talked to SBA about some problem out in Los Angeles or something. They had the earthquake thing out there, perhaps you remember.
Yeah.
A lot of people applied for loans, and they took the money from the loans to buy a new boat rather than repairing their house. And that was kind of a big problem in the Los Angeles area for a while.
But we won't find much documentation in the files on your, let's say, day-to-day contacts with these PIOs.
Nothing.
All the more valuable than this little discussion we're having. Again, John, I can't think of any other questions at this point. If this more or less hits the highlights, that's what we're after, and we'll come back to you 5 years from now.
You hit the highlights. Okay, thank you.